about the Republican Party versus the Democrat Party.
Talking about what matters.
It's the Republican Party versus an organized crime syndicate.
55 KRC, the talk station.
The 55 KRC, the talk station. It's Monday, into the weekend.
I'm the dude, man.
And I'm Brian Thomas, and a very happy Monday to you, like it or not, and, you know, one of those maybe not like it kind of moods. That's okay. You got to get back to work. Got to talk about what's important. And more in the passing of former Judge Norbert Nadel. Nick is what Alex Tarantafilo referred to him as. And I didn't, I never had heard him referred to as Nick. And apparently that was an inside thing at the courthouse. Maybe we'll get the lowdown from Alex Tarantafilo, because he will be on the program today in memory of the great Judge Norbert Nadel. I couldn't find a single comment, negative comment. Although, you know, when someone passes away, it's not a good time to pile on. But obviously very controversial judge, at least insofar as the Pete Rose decision was concerned. I remember when that happened. Courthouse open on a Sunday, Judge Nadel reading his opinion in front of the in the cameras. And anybody who knew Judge Nadel knew that he did love the public eye. He embraced it, and he would be anywhere a camera was. And, he, of course, popular political events and fundraisers, and apparently a great mentor to a lot of young people, lawyers and prosecutors and the like. So we will be hearing from Judge Alex Tarantafilo about Judge Nadel at 7:40. That will be after the Monday Morning Spleen Vent coming up, 7:05 with my dad, Jerry Thomas. That's the same thing we do every Monday. Also on the program on Mondays, quite often, and today is one of those quite often days, we're going to do Money Monday. Brian James will be talking about higher inflation. Is here to stay for years? Well, that's what some of the economists are saying. I did see a Wall Street Journal article on that. Actually, more than just the Wall Street Journal. Inflation pressures are a real problem. A lot of it is coming from the housing market. A whole lot of it. Congress considering credit reporting overhaul, including putting government in charge of scores. Ooh, does anybody like that idea? Listen, nobody dislikes the credit rating agencies more than me. I mean, what it's like the peace of God. It passes all human understanding. What the hell's going on over at TransUnion or any of the other major credit agencies? But you want government in charge, the same government that went after conservative organizations over at the IRS? You don't think your credit score could be politicized, do you? That's actually really frightening. Putting bureaucrats and politicians in charge of whether or not you're going to qualify for, well, fill in the blank. And the third topic of conversation coming up at 8:05 with Brian James. Child tax credit checks will be arriving soon. What is it, and how long is it going to last, and was this trip really necessary? And tail end of the program at 8:40, Kathy Reichs with her book, The Bone Code. New York Times bestselling author returns with her 20th novel featuring forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan. It's called The Bone Code, a mystery that combines her knowledge of forensic anthropology and the, modern things that are going on in the world. So fiction, but very much not, but in the realm of nonfiction. We've had a lot of authors that, but most notably military people, ex-military guys, who've seen it all, been in combat, then they incorporate reality into their fiction narrative. That sounds a lot like what we'll be talking about with Kathy and The Bone Code. So that'll be at 8:40. Phone number here, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Care to comment on something going on in the world, including the passing of Norbert Nadel? Maybe you have a thing or two to say. Feel free. He was 82 years old, apparently suffering from a short illness. Been around more. He was more than three decades as a common police court judge. The only reason he wasn't on the bench when he passed on is because of the age limitations. He went on to become the county recorder, as I think most folks know. Didn't start his career out immediately. His dad passed away when he was in high school. Talk about a hardworking guy. Nadel apparently took over his family's retail business at that point which he ran while attending college and later night classes. He went to Chase Law School for his law degree. Started over at the city solicitor's office, moved to the U.S. attorney's office as a top assistant, serving more than 30 years, as I mentioned, as a common pleas judge, being forced to retire because of state-mandated age limits. I love the Enquirer. Dan Horn, Sharon Coolidge, talking to Judge Hendon. Judge Hendon, who happened to have been at, she's a retired judge, but still call her judge, happened to have been at Mike Robison's fundraiser. It was good seeing her and Bob, her husband, pointed out Nada loved being in the courtroom, generous with colleagues and friends. When they needed advice on law, career, and politics, she referred to him as whip smart and had a wicked sense of humor. So when either Dan or Sharon of the Enquirer asked for Hendon's favorite example of his wicked sense of humor, quote, "You can't print my favorite memory," close quote. Good for you, Judge Hendon. Maybe I'll be remembered that way when I pass along or pass on into the great beyond. Anyhow, we all are mourning the passage of Norbert Nadel. And I don't, unconnected at all with the passing of Norbert Nadel, given the time constraints of the segments here, I don't want to go too long. I have this insanity. I asked Joe had printed the article out. I thankfully didn't see it. This one made me my eyes pop out of my head. Headline, fat sex therapist compares fitness trainers to Nazis and suggests that children's dieting is as bad as sexual assault. Now, there is so much loaded into that article and so much crap and psychobabble that I don't even really know where to begin, so let's hold that one off for a little while. Because it dovetails nicely into a Washington Post article about referring to food as exotic is apparently racist and xenophobic. Boy, that was an exotically spiced meal I had, and that apparently, that's because I'm judging it from a white person's standard. We're going off the edge, folks, and I'm telling you, all of these folks who assert this crap are in academia. These are the people that are influencing our children. I got an article along those lines. Rainbow monkey, and this is at the London Library Reading Challenge for Young Children. Redbridge Central Library hosted a performance from this group called Mandinga Arts Carnival Group, which arts carnival group included a man in a rainbow-colored monkey suit with a very large, we'll call it prosthetic, dangling between his legs. Some people refer to them delicately during FCC compliance issues as a marital aid. It's a word starts with D, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about here. This thing looks like it's about 12 inches long, and it's in. And this is for a children's story hour? Put that in the same stack. Anyway. So where am I going? In the remaining minutes here, I am so upset with Governor Mike DeWine vetoing a bill that would have allowed you, adults, to set off fireworks. Mike DeWine just didn't want to legalize fireworks in Ohio without more language to ensure Ohioans are kept safe. He's going to be there when you light the fuse. And vetoing it, he referred to a 1996 incident in Scottstown, Lawrence County, where 9 people died at a fireworks store. He noted Senate Bill 113 didn't require safety measures recommended in the wake of the tragedy while doubling the allowable square footage of fireworks stores. Now, I do have to observe, and he in his veto message, SB 113 would be a dramatic change in Ohio law, which would make Ohio one of the least restrictive states in regard to fireworks laws. Now, insofar as the size of the store is concerned, does anybody understand the idea of free markets and insurance? If you invest a lot of money in a fireworks store, let me assure you, the insurance company is going to rigorously go through there and evaluate it, risk management sort of evaluation to determine whether or not it's even safe to insure that store. So there would be safety measures in place, notwithstanding the fact that there are already like 9 gazillion laws on the book dealing with workplace safety. OSHA, for example, immediately comes to mind. And I will not for a second suggest that there aren't fireworks injuries. But you know what? We live in a world where we can drive around in a 4,000-pound automobile moving at 75-plus miles an hour. And how dangerous is that? There are laws in the books which prohibit you from, being intoxicated behind the wheel. Some people choose not to follow those. Accidents happen. Dangerous. Do we end everything we're doing as a consequence of the downside and the risk associated with it? I don't know. I don't enjoy paternalism at all, and this is one form of it. There are a lot of states out there that allow you to buy the fireworks and light them off within the state. I don't think it's risen to the level of, you know, pandemic, or risen to pandemic level deaths and injury levels, but you can draw your own conclusion. Governor DeWine standing in the way of, well, one liberty that you might have had. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. I want to put a quick word in here for my favorite place to shoot, 22-3 Firearms. Route 42 between Mason and Lebanon. You're going to love being there. Owners of Station. Able to find time to cut your grass, Joe? A couple times? Oh, wow. You're lucky. It was just pouring, man. I actually cut mine last night after dinner. It was the grass had just gotten dry enough because it just poured all morning. And, of course, we got a lot of weekend rain as well. So it was getting really, really long. Okay. Thomas just updated us about his grass cutting. Anyhow, hope you were so lucky as well. Otherwise, you got a real job on your hands because... Just growing. And just watch it, and it grows.
Are we not saying phrasing anymore?
There you are. It reminds me of that rainbow monkey appendage there, Joe. It was weird. The police are calling it a potential Las Vegas-style shooting, which was disrupted, thankfully, because a housekeeper discovered a bunch of long guns and 1,000 rounds of ammo inside one of the rooms outside the All-Star game, this in Denver. Multiple informed law enforcement sources connected with the investigation, speaking with local news there, said they found weapons inside the room. Eighth floor of the Maven Hotel. This is All-Star game celebrations were underway. Sources say police removed 16 long guns, body armor, and more than 1,000 rounds of ammo from the room. The room had a balcony overlooking the downtown area. And, of course, everybody's concerned that given the large cache of weapons and number of rounds, that this would have been comparable to the Las Vegas shooting and that no one can forget. Police executed a search warrant after the information was given by the hotel employee. They had probable cause to issue a warrant. That's where they found the guns, ammo, body armor, and a man inside the room. One of the suspects arrested Friday night. Oddly enough, and here's where the red flags fly, posted a message on Facebook. He recently was divorced. He said he was going to go out in a big way. Quote, go out in a big way, close quote. You know, I think about Judge Andrew Napolitano talking about the NSA scooping up all of our communications on a daily basis, and the sheer volume of them makes it, well, if not virtually, literally impossible to go through. Here's a guy who says he's going to go out in a big way. How many ways could you interpret that? Should this man have been, you know, maybe had his door knocked on based upon his social media post? You know, we're moving toward a world like that. Anyway, thankfully, whatever go out in a big way meant to him, it didn't manifest itself unless he meant going out in a big way being arrested for having illegal firearms. SWAT team showed up at the Maven Hotel. They shut it down to allow the investigators to sort through the scene. One witness saw a car being loaded on a flatbed. They did say they confiscated a couple of cars, including all of the munitions that were in the room. In total, 3 men, 1 woman were arrested on Friday, along with 2 vehicles. Richard Platt, he's 42, under investigation for possession of a weapon by a previous offender, possession of a controlled substance with intention to distribute, and a warrant from another jurisdiction. So he had some baggage with him. 48-year-old Gabriel Rodriguez, investigated for possession of a weapon by a previous offender, controlled substance possession with intent to distribute. Apparently there were drugs in the room, too. No, the drugs were not identified in any of the reporting that I could see. Ricardo Rodriguez, probably Gabe's brother, given that Ricardo's 44, Gabe's 48, possession of a weapon by a previous offender. All these folks have records. They're not supposed to be able to be possessing firearms. There's another one of those laws on the books that apparently not doing anything. And finally, I'm going to struggle with this one's name. It's her. Kanoa Lehua. Yeah, Kanoa Lehua. Sarakawa is her last name. 43 years old, in possession of controlled substance with intent to distribute, as well as a warrant from another jurisdiction. The only person to appear in court was this Richard Platt. That happened yesterday. Bond set at cash only, $50,000 bond. The rest of them are in jail waiting for the defense attorney assignments. So, FBI released a statement yesterday saying they're not aware of any threats to the All-Star game and have no reason to believe that the Friday arrests were connected to the event, at least at this time. They say they were not aware of any threat to the All-Star game events, venues, players, or community, again, at this time. Subject to their stories being revised, yes, of course, after the investigation is over with. We'll see if we had any motivations that could be uncovered. Maybe they'll go to the NSA and search everybody's texts and emails that were exchanged among these defendants now that they actually have probable cause to get a warrant to do that. 525, got local stories coming up. Alternatively, your phone calls would be nice. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Something else that's nice, gets rid of the smells in your world, is Odor Exit. Wonderful product. First heard about it from Gary Sullivan a long time ago, and the good people at Odor Exit asked me to speak on their behalf, and I was happy to do it because I know how well it works. Used Odor Exit many times over the years myself. I really have. I like having the Odor Exit magic in my car. It's 5:30 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Joe and I are having a little walk down memory lane. I know this isn't a local story. I had it in the stack of stupid. Last week I was lamenting the fact, and I was glad that Goodwill made out on it because someone had donated some old video games to Goodwill, and inside was a video game that ultimately sold on auction for $10,000. It was an old Atari game, and Joe and I were like, what the hell? Seriously? Well, I should set my sights a little differently. Now, we were talking about when we were kids, you know, things that we played with that now have value. And Joe had a buddy whose parents worked for Kenner, which was the manufacturer of the Star Wars toys. So his buddy had literally everything, and they would play with them. And, you know, and that's what you did. You blew them up with firecrackers, and you played, and now they're probably gone. And if they were all in little boxes right now, his friend would be a multimillionaire. But there, you know, he had fun playing with them. An unopened copy of Nintendo's Legend of Zelda, apparently manufactured in 1987, just sold at auction. Sit down for this. The world is so blanking stupid sometimes. $870,000. This, of course, Dallas-based Heritage Auction. They're apparently in the business of selling these games. They actually have a person named Valerie McLecky, described as Heritage's video game specialist. 1987 unopened copy, $870,000. Yeah, I know. She had a college degree for that one, Joe, I'm sure. In April, the auction sold an unopened copy of Nintendo's Super Mario Brothers for $660,000. Okay. All right. Your money. You spend it on what you want. Doesn't mean I can't find fault in it. Cincinnati police said they're investigating a stabbing and crash that happened. Driver found stabbed and suffering from life-threatening injuries inside a vehicle that wrecked on 3rd Street near the entrance to the Clay Wade Bailey Bridge. Person taken to UC Medical Center. Police say determined the victim was stabbed before the crash, but they're not sure where the stabbing occurred. Any information, find out more on this one. I'm sure to let you know. Here's something shocking. Actual policing going on in the city of Cincinnati. Brought to you by Cincinnati Police Chief Elliot Isaac. Calling in a new initiative starts this weekend, increasing staffing for safety purposes throughout the entire summer. Beginning Friday, July 9th, the department added 20 to 25 bike and patrol officers to the regular weekend staffing and efforts of the Gun Crime Task Force. According to the statement from the chief, this team is not focused solely on crowd control, but if a district needs immediate assistance, they are readily available for whatever that need may be. Our department's biggest asset is our presence, and by adding additional resources to help with visibility and deployment, our city will be a safer place. We want to make sure that everyone, residents and visitors alike, have a safe and positive experience while enjoying the summer months in Cincinnati. Wonderful thought from the chief. What does that mean? You got additional bodies, you have additional police officers, you have an increased spike in crime in any given area, or a large presence of people that perhaps getting unruly. You send in more officers, running completely contrary to the left-wing narrative that you fire all the officers and send in some social workers. Office manager now been accused of stealing $500,000 from a pediatric care clinic in Delhi Township. 39-year-old Christy Adams indicted on July 8th. After police say she embezzled money from Westside Pediatrics, now facing 10 felony counts, including 6 counts of theft, misuse of a credit card, telecommunications fraud, forgery, and tampering with records. Delhi Township Police Department said that the embezzlement began soon after she was hired in the fall of 2019. According to the police, she used the money to pay for vacations, cruises, vehicles, her daughter's wedding, and increased her salary. The press release said that doctors knew that there were financial issues at the practice, but felt like it was the pandemic. Police said an audit found Adams has stolen over $500,000. Wow. She's arrested, released on an own recognizance bond on Friday. Court date has yet to be set. 5:35. Oh, Tom's on the phone. Tom, we'll get your call right out of the gate when we get into the Stack of Stupid. Coming up, after I mentioned Goodwill, a phenomenal charity, Goodwill. The whole concept of give a man a fish or a person, and he or she will eat for a day. Teach that person to fish, they will eat for a lifetime. They're in the teaching people to fish business. And this is their charity, and it helps everyone in our community because they're taking homeless veterans and providing them with job training and placement, which is just beautiful. That's what they do at Goodwill. Folks on life margins are not turned down. They are helped. And you help Goodwill. I hope you drop off your household items, clothing, and things like that to the Goodwill stores. And I hope you have an old extra vehicle laying around you're not using and that you donate it to the Goodwill auto auction. Car, boat, truck, or motorcycle, they'll take it from you. They come to you, tow the vehicle, sell it on Saturdays. Auctions begin at 9 a.m. with doors opening at 8 for the folks to check out the inventory. Once sold, you'll get a receipt. They'll take care of getting it to you for the full value of the sale price. That is a charitable contribution, Goodwill being a qualified charity. So call them up. Get them to come over to your place. Get rid of that old vehicle. It's taking up space, and it's not helping anybody. 612-5980 is the number. 612-5980. Heck, if you want to find out information, you can go right now to goodwillcars.com. It's 540 at 55 Care City Talk Station. Going to go over to the phones. Got a couple of callers online. Phone number here, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. #550 on AT&T phones. Remember, it being Monday, Monday Morning Spleen, then coming up at 7:05. And also, Alex Trantafilo on the passing of, and the sad, tragic passing of Judge Norbert Nadel. Although he did lead a very, very long and successful life and career. 82 years old, died after a short illness. Over to the phones, as promised. We'll start with Tom. I got Pete on the phone with a comment about toys. Hold on, Pete. Hey, Tom. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, they changed that one saying. The left got a hold of it. And instead of the whole feed a man a fish, give a man a fish, feed him for a day thing, it's teach him that he's a victim and that the government owes him everything and he'll demand free stuff for a lifetime.
Oh, yeah.
That's the new updated version, by the way.
It is.
People have not been paying attention to the Democratic platform. These video games, these old games, whether the video games or whatever, you know, if I didn't, you know, use my imagination as a kid and play with toys and you know, get together with my buddies and do stuff, I wouldn't be nearly as well adjusted as I am right now. And of course, I can hear Jerry and Matt right now laughing their heads off as they. But it's true. I mean, you gotta let kids use their imagination. You don't want to take their stuff and box it up and say, no, we're just going to look at that.
Well,
we're just going to let it sit. And
well, actually, the article suggests in both of these video games that stole for hundreds of thousands of dollars were in their original packages and left unattended. I guess they were lost. One was found in a drawer, never been opened. But all that doesn't matter to me. At the time, I don't think very many, if anyone, thought that a Legend of Zelda video game would be worth anything more than the original price paid, because the price of electronics tends to go down as the electronic transforms and change into something that is better by way of game interaction and graphics and all that. So an old Legend of Zelda game looks like, yes, an old Legend of Zelda game. So it probably wouldn't be fun playing it now. So as Joe and I were talking off the break, what in the hell do you do with it after you get done paying $870,000 for it? You put it in a curio cabinet and you stare at it. What the hell? Joe Biden's artwork would do you more good, or Hunter Biden's artwork would probably do you more good. It would certainly garner more laughter. You paid $500,000 for that? Bah!
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
Hey, Pete, thanks for calling. Welcome to the morning show.
Thanks, Brian. Hey, these people throw their money away on stuff. Two articles I read. The one, an Italian sculptor sculpted an invisible sculpture in about $18,000. And there's a digital artist that makes a digital artwork every day, and he's done this for 5,000 days, so he put a compilation together of 5,000 days of his digital artwork, and it brought $69 million.
Oh, my God. If you're just because you're rich doesn't mean you're smart or have common sense, right, Pete? Thank you, man. Well, again, I'm not usually one to criticize how you want to spend your money. I'm sure here... I'm not telling you, don't spend the money on what you want, but wow, really? Really? See, the problem with stories like that, they're the ones that stir and foment class warfare arguments. Oh, this person's got so much money, they spent $860,000 on a Legend of Zelda game. Yeah, that almost sounds like a compelling argument, doesn't it? Anyhow, over to the Stack of Stupid, but we've been talking about the Stack of Stupid. This is another walk-away story, which are typical in the Stack of Stupid. According to the news, this from West Pittston, Luzerne County, wherever that happens to be, 62-year-old Timothy DePuerto admitted to police that he assaulted his wife after she was bothering him. This after she was eating a grilled cheese sandwich and potato chips, and some of it had fallen into the sink. This guy allegedly told police his wife had been belittling him about his family and how she makes more money than he does. Out of built-up frustration, it's described, he allegedly grabbed his wife around her throat to get her to stop and held her head under bathtub water. She managed to escape, then he pushed her to the floor and used a chair to choke her. In fact, he himself called 911, reporting that there was violence in the residence, telling 911 dispatcher that he would have to... The police, rather, would have to place a gun to his head to calm him down, and he was going to kill people if police did not arrive. Well, they did arrive. They found DePuerto pacing outside of his residence, described in an agitated state. Told police the disturbance started when he asked his wife to go to church with him and suggested that both of them stop drinking. Allegedly told police he gets very angry when he drinks and wanted to kill his wife. Well, we've apparently identified the problem, haven't we? Written statement, the woman reported that she was underwater multiple times by her husband. Every time she was able to lift her head, he forced her back underwater. Police said the woman had injuries to her arms, mouth, and eyes. Told police she believed he was going to kill her. It was arranged by the district court judge. Luzerne County Central Court. Two counts each of simple assault and strangulation. One count each of aggravated assault, terroristic threats, reckless endangerment. Jailed in the Luzerne County Correctional Facility for lack of $75,000 in bail.
Just walk away.
Would have been a lot easier. 5:45. Coming up at 5. The Talk Station, Monday. Spleen Vent Monday. We're going to hear from Alex Trentafilo on the passage of Judge Nadel at 7:40. Brian James from Money Monday on some really good topics, including this inflation we're dealing with. And Kathy Reichs with her new book, The Bone Code. Work of fiction based largely on nonfiction. Anyway, back over to the stack of stupid. A man described as a perverted park worker went crazy in Manhattan on a playground, exposing himself to a mother and a toddler, urinating in the street, and then laying down in the middle of Broadway traffic to fondle himself. This, according to not just witness statements, but actual video footage.
Dude, what the hell?
Oh, it gets so much better. The on-duty uniformed worker, Jeremy Soto, 36 years old, told cops, quote, "I'm high on PCP," close quote, that after being arrested for his exposing himself. Busted 2 days later for allegedly hugging a woman from behind on a Bronx subway platform, grabbing her breasts and kissing her neck. Question why Soto was on the city payroll at all, let alone allowing being allowed to work inside the playground. He has 15 arrests on his rap sheet going back to 2003. And in January, charged with and pled guilty to twice grabbing the bottom of a woman walking near the same park. Unbelievable. This is New York. These are New York employees. This is the kind of, well, government you get when you vote the way you vote in New York. One woman asked, who witnessed the May 1st incident inside the park, why was he placed in a playground? It's almost a rhetorical question, isn't it? I teach my children if they get into trouble in a public place to look for someone in a uniform, and the idea that they could have gone to him is horrifying. Yep. Happened on a Sunday morning, about 15 people enjoying an outdoor Zumba class at the Parks and Loftus playground. As the instructors were leaving the class from the park building patio, Mr. Soto walked out of the building in a jacket which said staff.
Phrasing?
He was sort of dancing and gesturing to the music. Everyone sort of laughed, and the teachers were good-natured about it. They ushered Soto away, but he came back. According to the teacher, I noticed he was focusing on one of the teachers who was female. He was staring at her in a way that made me uncomfortable. He was sort of walking around after her in a menacing fashion. Soto was shooed away again, but he didn't go very far. Wandered to a nearby set of swings that were designed for babies and toddlers. According to the witness, quote, he took his penis out of his pants. I saw him take it out and start swinging it around and gesturing lewdly.
As is tradition.
Crude gestures. Sexual gestures toward a mother and her toddler on the swings. Close quote. He was calling out to the mother to try to get her attention, according to the witness. Zumba class participants reach for their phones, call the police, and that's as Soto went to exit the park located in Upper Manhattan. Photo video shows him standing on Broadway again, relieving himself before walking. Joe, it's described here, walking stiff-legged.
Phrasing?
To the striped median, then laying down with his left hand, again playing with his exposed private parts. A little bit makes you want to move to Manhattan, doesn't it? 11 cars drove by, most not even braking, which that's what you get in New York. He could have been laying there with a gunshot wound. People would have driven by. Witnesses say his fellow park workers arrived and tried to coax him up to get him shortly before the New York Police Department came.
Phrasing?
Already racked up a laundry list of offenses, beginning again with the fare beating. 2003, pleaded guilty to 15 crimes, including possession of crack cocaine, serving just a few days of weeks of jail time for some of the offenses. In spite of all that, he was hired by the city of New York in 2016, where records show he was in a job training program for the Parks Department, earning $12 an hour. hired his most recent stint as a seasonal maintenance worker in February of this year. Didn't divulge his most recent January arrest. As for why he was hired in the first place, the spokesperson said, quote, if someone does list previous arrests on their application, we will look into them for any red flags and further investigate as needed. We don't automatically deny a candidate based on an arrest or conviction, and we don't consider arrests where the case was dismissed. We also do background checks. No, you don't. You're right, Joe. Wow. Wow. Actually, I can go you one better. Coming out of the 6 o'clock gate. I am just I shouldn't be shocked by this kind of thing anymore, but we have some rather interesting psychobabble, which I suppose is now the norm. Ready to introduce you to that. Don't go away, I'll be right back after the news.
Man, I've got certain information.
Sharing certain information.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
With lots of blathering in between, man. On 55 KRC.
Coming up on 606 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have executive producer Joe Strecker in there. And appreciate Joe lining up the guests today, including my dad coming up in 1 hour with the Monday Morning Spleen Vent with Jerry Thomas, followed by... And normally we get him for lighter subjects, even if politics can't always be described as light. But Alex Trantafilo joins the program, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party, at 7:40 to discuss the passing of 82-year-old Judge Norbert Nadel. And we'll get the lowdown behind why Alex continues to refer to him as Nick. I read some little line in there. Apparently that was a courthouse thing, kind of nickname thing. Anyway, something unbeknownst to me, but Judge Nadel... You couldn't live in Cincinnati for very long without hearing about or even running into Judge Nadel. So enjoyed a very good reputation, and the main controversial thing that he did was the Pete Rose decision, which while saving Pete Rose for about 5 minutes, quickly overturned on appeal, and we all know the aftermath of that. Brian James coming up at 8:05 Money Monday. He's got some good topics to talk about today. Higher inflation, a lot of economists are saying it's going to be around for a long time, couple of years at least. Housing inflation is one of the main reasons for that one, but there are other things. This one is frightening, and I cannot wait to talk to Brian about topic number two, which is Congress considering a credit reporting overhaul, which would include putting Congress or government in charge of your credit score. Now, you're not going to hear me defend the three rating agencies that we've got because it's, as I mentioned in the last hour, it's kind of like the peace of God. How we end up with a credit score passes all human understanding. But do you want government officials who are well known to attack particular organizations or political thought processes that individuals hold go after them illegally quite often? You know, we do have a lot of illustrations in our country of that happening. You can look at the McCarthy era and the witch hunt that resulted in a lot of people losing their in situations or jobs, employment, blacklisted just because of the thought processes that they carried. And while many argue that, well, you're a commie, you should be outed. How does it feel to be conservative these days? Because the exact same thing is happening. Look at Lois Lerner's IRS and how they went after conservative organizations. Do you think you would be free from political bias insofar as your credit score is concerned? Yeah. And good luck trying to figure out how they calculate it. Yeah, they'll be really open and honest on that. Go ahead, file your FOIA request and wait around for about 10 years and hire lawyers in order to enforce it. Do I sound skeptical, perhaps cynical? And finally, Brian will be talking to us about child credit checks arriving soon and what the new credit is and how long it's going to be around. Kathy Reichs with her new book, The Bone Code, that coming up at 8:40. Phone number here, if you'd like to comment, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or hit #550 on your AT&T phone. This is absolutely bat crap insane. I could not believe what I was reading. Thanks to campus reform... we now know about Sonali Rachitwar. She self-monikers herself the fat, sex, Therapist. That's her Instagram username. Now, this is an older article, but, you know, it's something like this. You have to understand that our children are being taught and that this is the opinions and thought processes of folks in academia. This woman apparently was, maybe still is, St. Olaf College, because, we're going back a little while on this article's age. She said, I experience diet culture as a form of assault because it impacts the way that I experience my body. She's talking about diet and exercise here. Apparently gave a two-hour speech, again, going back to 2019 on this, at the St. Olaf College Wellness Center Women's and Gender Studies Department and Center for Equity and Inclusion. How's that for a mouthful? The topic, radical fat liberation. Talk included suggestions, assertions that fitness was the cause of the Christchurch shooting. Remember the one in New Zealand? Now, again, going back a little while, but because the guy at the Christchurch shooting was a fitness instructor, she believes that New Zealand shooting had something to do with Nazism. I'm telling you, man, this is a difficult one to work yourself through. Anyway, here's what she said. Tonight, we're going to start by talking about how to politicize our definition of body image. See? And I love that this is an older article because it gives you some insight in the groundwork on how they end up politicizing something that shouldn't be political. Your health. Obesity is the second leading cause of preventable death. It is we all know, a comorbid condition of COVID-19, right? If you're obese, you are much more likely to struggle and have more significant complications health-wise than if you are not obese. All things being equal, the obese among us struggled and perhaps even suffered a higher death rate with COVID than non-obese folks. This is inarguable. It's science. But anyway, she wants to politicize body image because, she said, oftentimes we actually get stuck thinking of it from a white supremacist lens. Okay, you see where she went there? Now, fitness is white supremacist. She explained how white supremacy happens every day in all of these little things. Again, a quote from her. Quote, we should be critical of the use of science and the production of knowledge to continue promoting this idea that certain bodies are fit, able, and desirable. It is my fatness that causes my high blood pressure, or it is my experience of weight stigma. So you see, I love that one. Obesity can cause high blood pressure. It's documented. It has nothing to do with your mental state about your weight. But see, what she is doing is trying to say, well, I've got high blood pressure. It's only because you have stigmatized me through your white supremacist lens. Does this make your brain hurt as much as it makes mine? I love that, be critical of science. See, she wants to be critical of science because science has led us to the conclusion that being overweight can cause you, it's not in all cases, but can be a contributing factor to poor health. High blood pressure, heart disease, that kind of thing. Diabetes is another one. But no, we don't want to look at that. What we want to look to do is that the psychological pressure of somehow achieving this desired level of weight, in other words, getting to a certain weight so you are not at risk any longer, is a white supremacist thing. She connected the science suggesting obesity is unhealthy to Nazism, saying that fat-phobic science is often actually eugenic science. Eugenic science is Nazi science. These are her words, not mine. Margaret Sanger, the Planned Parenthood head, she was without question into eugenics, eliminating black people from the planet. This was her goal. And yet we all put her up on a pedestal for some crazy reason. This woman now says diet, exercise, and encouraging people to, well, achieve some level of fitness is Nazism. (laughs) After addressing the topic of science and making her claim that there is no connection between high blood pressure and obesity, she then talked about political philosophy and policy. Quote, this conversation about pushing off our own well-being onto the individual is part of the 1980s Reagan-era policies that, again, try to move that structural obligation of a system and this social safety net onto the individual. And you may be going, what? That doesn't make sense. You're right. It doesn't. And again, you have to look at this through the leftist lens that she's looking at it. Pushing off our own well-being onto the individual. So the parallel I can draw on this one is you have an automobile insurance policy, right? And if you are, well, a certain type of driver, you've got a history of accidents or speeding tickets, you are what they characterize as a higher risk, which requires you to pay a higher premium because the likelihood of you having an accident that will require your insurance company to reimburse it is higher. See, there's a direct connection between your driving habits and how much you pay for insurance. Now, that's free market stuff right there. Yes, the state requires you to buy insurance, but you know, what your premium is depends upon your driving habits and skills. Okay? This is her suggesting that the pushing off of your own well-being onto the individual, in other words, you being responsible for your own health, that's an 80s era thing. That's those evil conservatives that don't embrace the obligation of the system and the social safety net. She is saying, I'm allowed to be fat and not be responsible for my own well-being in a world where you, my friends, are paying for her health care. Socialized medicine, duh. Does anybody get rated for socialized medicine? You're in a group policy at work. Do they rate you? No. Oh, that would be cruel and unusual and evil, and it would require people to take some stock in their own personal well-being, and in order to get a lower premium, become more healthy. Now, they have all kinds of programs they'll help you through, and they'll guide you, and they'll make recommendations. They'll ask you to input all kinds of information about diet and exercise, all of this to help you become a better person, but they won't rate you higher, providing you a financial disincentive or incentive, depending on your perspective, to get healthy. Her solution, the article says, to the problems of society requiring individual responsibility was calling students to challenge all authorities, not just the authority that science has given, but also legal authority. The same way I want us to all challenge laws. I want us to all challenge prisons and policing. What? Again, psycho babble nonsense. This is your paying. I looked up on Wikipedia, this St. Olaf College. In addition to having taken and appropriated tribal land, specifically the college built in 1874 on land from the Wapakuti Band of the Dakota Nation, which ultimately resulted in protests because of the evil, obviously white supremacist nature of the takeover. She works there. Average tuition after assistance, $23,000. St. Olaf College. And your children will come back with this kind of attitude, probably. 618, 55 KRC, the talk station. Oh, calling food exotic, that's Z. KRCD Talk Station. And a very happy Monday to you. Spleen Bet Monday coming up at 7:05. My dad. And thank you to my mom and dad for encouraging me to lose weight because I was the fat kid in the neighborhood. Going back to this fat sex therapist that said, I truly believe that a child cannot consent to being on a diet the same way a child cannot consent to having sex. Wow. Mmm. Well, I truly appreciate my parents' efforts, and I think, you know, in spite of the fact that I did gain probably 15 pounds over the COVID thing that I need to lose, I've been able to manage it my entire life. So, thank you again. Now, over to it's close in topic because it relates to food that we eat, but another bat crap insane thing, this from the Washington Post food editor. Exotic, the word exotic, when you are describing food as exotic, you are a racist xenophobe. That's basically the sum and substance of this article. Article written by the paper's food section writer, guy named or a woman named Daniela Galarza. Article titled, Stop Calling Food Exotic, begins by quoting a couple who praised an Afghani restaurant referring to the cuisine served as exotic. Though she admitted the couple meant no harm, and I think that's the critical and most salient point here. They didn't mean it in a negative way. They were wowed by it, in essence. It was something they hadn't experienced before, but therein, for her, lies the problem. Their use of the term exotic indicates that they see the world through, are you ready, quote, a presumptive Anglo-centric perspective, close quote. she wrote, what's exotic to you isn't exotic to my neighbor, might not be exotic to my mom, probably wouldn't be exotic to my best friend. So what? It's not insulting. Over in Afghanistan, I suppose, if you gave them, oh, how about some Skyline chili, Joe, or maybe a La Rosa's pizza? Huh? One of the local cuisines, some Geta? I bet there are a whole bunch of Afghanis who might refer to our cuisine as exotic. Are they looking at the world through an Anglo-centric lens? Or are they looking at it through the lens of someone who grew up in Afghanistan and has never had Skyline chili before? You can't, you're not safe anywhere. It's the reason I brought these things up. You just really, from the eyes of these leftists, they are just trying to disrupt you. They're trying to keep you back on your heels. Everything, you're going to have to parse every single phrase and words. Hell, we're being accused of being racist for things that we're not even aware are racist. We have to have it explained to us that words and phrases and comments and statements, although seemingly completely neutral on the subject of race, are in fact racist. You're like, well, wait a second. How in the hell am I supposed to know? I think of the word exotic as a positive. It is an it's a wonderful way of describing something that's new to you. And thanks all to thanks again to my mom for being such an amazing cook in the kitchen. Never shied away from exotic food. Thomas just used the word exotic, meaning he's a racist and xenophobe. No, growing up in Delhi in the 1970s, it really wasn't, it was rather quite unique to enjoy some of the world cuisine that my mom would cook up in the kitchen. Things that I bet nobody in the neighborhood had ever heard of. They quote Chandra D. Waring, professor of sociology at the University of Massachusetts Lowell, who claimed the term exotic is only used to describe something non-white. I quote, I have never heard the word exotic used in reference to something that is white, close quote. First off, what the hell is white? Second of all, University of Massachusetts Lowell professor of sociology Chandra Waring, you ever been to Afghanistan and heard what they say about it if you brought them up some Skyline? Have you ever been outside of your own academic world and listened to how people from other areas of the world and other cultures view perhaps our culture? Might they often use the word exotic or other similar words to describe something that's not familiar with them? Would they therefore be somehow racist? This is crazy. We are dealing in a world that is crazy, and it is incumbent upon you to stand up, and when you see this crap, point it out for what it is. Crap. Absolute and insane on top of it. Bat crap insanity is how I'll sum it up. 628-55-KRC, the talk station. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Your Wellness Center, wonderful folks at Your Wellness Center helping, men and women achieve hormone perfection. I guess I could probably use that. It is 6:32 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Happy Monday to you. Got local stories here. If you want to call, feel free, 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Anyway, big story this morning. We all will have Hamilton County Republican Party Chair Alex Trentafila to go through the life of Judge Norbert Nadel, who passed at 82, just recently passed over the weekend. So more than three decades as common police court judge. And, of course, we all know him for his the Pete Rose decision, issuing an injunction against, I guess it was Major League Baseball or the commissioner from seeking to have him suspended. And we all know that didn't work out for Pete Rose. In any event, Judge Nadel, an unbelievable storied legal career here in the Cincinnati area. Cincinnati police, they're investigating, this is a weird one, a stabbing and a crash. If you got any information on this, I know the police would love to hear from you. Driver found stabbed and suffering from life-threatening injuries inside a vehicle that wrecked on 3rd Street near the entrance to the Clayway-Bailey Bridge. Taken to UC Medical Center, police say they determined the victim was stabbed before the crash, but they're not sure where. No other information, no name of the victim yet. So get any information. I'm sure Crime Stoppers would love to hear you, 352-3040. Chief Isaac's announcing that, well, we're going to have more police officers the rest of the summer, which is a good thing. Now, they're just talking about extra patrols. According to Isaac, beginning this past Friday, the department added 20 to 25 bike patrol officers to the regular weekend staffing. This relates, I guess, to the efforts regarding the gun crime task force. Got a little bit of a problem with gun violence in the city, certainly not as bad as a place like Chicago. But the way you respond to that, good policing is to send more officers in the areas where the problems are, which I know seems logical and reasonable to logical and reasonable folks. But this is contrary to the defund the police efforts that are going on in the rest of the country. This team is not focused solely on crowd control, but if a district needs immediate assistance, the chief said, they are readily available for whatever that need may be. Our department's biggest asset is our presence, and by adding additional resources to help with visibility and deployment, our city will be safer, a safer place. Yep. Good for the chief. 635-55 KRC, the talk station. 740. It is 6:39 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. A very happy Monday to you. Always made happier because of the Monday Morning Spleen Vent. Always made happier when you call. Like to hear from you and talk to folks about what's going on in their heads. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or #550 on AT&T phones. I don't know which direction to go here. I noticed that the number of vaccinated kids in between 18 and 29, that sort of young people range, they've been resisting the vaccines for a variety of reasons. And, you know, young people in that age group are not necessarily right-wing conservatives all, but a very, very large swath of them have just decided they aren't going to get the vaccine for a variety of reasons. I mean, first off, they're adults and they're entitled to make their own choices. Second off, I suppose they've read enough of the articles, literature, and to know that, for a couple of reasons, they're doing the weight and the cost-benefit analysis, that they're not in a comorbid, tough place insofar as the likelihood that they're going to suffer severe illness or die as a result of contracting COVID-19. I mean, if I look at my own family's experience, you know, my daughter had it for a total of 1 week. My son didn't have any symptoms whatsoever, in spite of the fact that it ran through the entire house. You know, my wife had it for a day, and I ended up having it for 6 weeks. So go figure. But young people not nearly impacted as much as older and those with comorbid conditions. So they are making informed decisions that they don't want it and don't need it. Dr. Fauci's out pulling his hair out, calling this ideological rigidity. You have half of all eligible Americans have received full vaccinations against coronavirus. But now roll them out, the Delta and Lambda virus, and don't forget the Epsilon virus. I was surprised that Fox News reporting on this one didn't include that as well, because we just learned out about the Epsilon strand last week. But because these are so much more contagious, Fauci's out pulling his hair out, you know, and telling people we need all get vaccinated, all need to get vaccinated. There are ample supplies out there. Young people, you need to get vaccinated. He's blaming politics. I mean, this is his quote, speaking on CNN State of the Union yesterday. I mean, it's ideological rigidity I think there's no reason not to get vaccinated. Well, stop right there, Fauci. What do you mean no reason not to get vaccinated? First off, I am always irked and am quick to point out that you don't need a vaccine if you've already had COVID-19. There you go. You've got natural immunity. So there is one reason to not get vaccinated. Coupled with the fact that from everything I've read, a lot of people suffer some pretty bad side effects when they get the COVID-19 vaccine after already having had COVID. Yeah, it's a flashback you don't want. If my experience is anything like your experience, if you got COVID-19, it sucked huge. And you don't really want a vaccine that's going to cause you to go through those symptoms again, even if it's for a shorter period of time. But again, I'm falling back on that natural immunity. So addressing Dr. Fauci's, I think there's no reason not to get vaccinated. There's one point. Second point, if you're a young person, you might, and it's not huge statistically, but since you're so low at risk in terms of dying or otherwise contracting a real bad case of this virus, what about the myocarditis problem, the heart problem, the one that lasts? That may be another reason young people don't want to do it, but it has nothing to do, Dr. Fauci, with their political ideology. Why are we having red states and places in the South that are very highly ideological in one way, not wanting to get vaccinations? Vaccinations have nothing to do with politics. Well, pause for a moment. Red states and places in the South. Huh. Joe, we have a very sizable African-American population in the South. Last time I read, wasn't it Joe Biden said that if you are black, or you're not black if you don't vote Democrat? So then in Joe Biden's explanation, every single black person in the South is Democrat. Just because it's a red state doesn't mean it's devoid and free of all political opposition against Republicans. Let's be realistic on this, Dr. Fauci. I don't know why they do this. And then he had to go at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that took place over the weekend, referring to it as horrifying. It's horrifying. I mean, they're cheering about something, or someone saying it's a good thing for people not to try and save their lives. Apparently, participants at CPAC cheered after a comment that the government was not able to achieve 90% vaccinations. I think that may have been cheering more at the consequence of government oversight and government mandates and edicts and people at least being free in this country to disregard them for a variety of reasons. Even though Dr. Fauci can't come up with a single reason, hey, maybe Dr. Fauci isn't religious and maybe he does not subscribe to the religious doctrine and dogma that some religions have, which is you don't use modern medicine to counteract something that God is responsible for. Now, you can find fault with that political or that religious philosophy. Hey, I bet you can find fault with a lot of religious philosophies. We live in a country that's free, has freedom of religion, and therefore you have the freedom on religious grounds to reject a vaccination because it runs contrary to them. Hey, Dr. Fauci, there's reason number two. And I suppose you can come up with multiple different reasons on your own. He says he just doesn't get it. I do not understand CPAC and the cheering. It's because he doesn't understand the concept of freedom. And this is the beautiful thing in this country. It's, you know, one of the reasons, you know, kind of got upset this morning with Governor DeWine vetoing the whole idea that you, as an adult, could light off fireworks in your backyard, even though you're doing it anyway. Yes, it comes with a risk that you're capable of evaluating. Just like the risk every single day you put your foot down getting out of bed this morning, you are facing multitude of risks, which you will evaluate. And you will make an informed decision, informed based upon what's going through your mind, but at least you get to make the decision. Cheers. Round of applause. Just the entire concept of the freedom that we enjoy. That runs quite afoul of the powers that be, though, doesn't it? 646. Look, Dennis is on the phone with a comment about Dr. Fauci. Please. It's 651 55 KRC Talk Station. Let's get over to the phone. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or go to #550 on AT&T phones. And always remember, when you can't listen live, just go podcast at 55krc.com, where you can also stream the audio. If you have one of those terrestrial radios that tends to be hissing and popping or maybe drops out, just pull up on the audio and stream it at 55krc.com. Crystal clear. Let's get to Dennis. Dennis, thanks for holding over the break, and happy Monday to you, sir.
And merry Monday to you, too, sir.
Thanks.
First of all, I think for Fauci to make a statement like that, he's politicizing it.
Yeah, I know. Exactly, Dennis. Exactly.
He's not respecting people's individualities at all. One, it's still an emergency approved.
Yes, sir. Oh, there's another reason.
Make sure her body part didn't drop off.
There you go. Add that to the list of legitimate reasons to not get the vaccine, which Fauci seemingly can't find one.
And what about people that have a phobia about needles and sharp objects?
Well, we must allow them their sensitivities, right, Dennis? I mean, we give safe spaces to college students who can't hear language out in the world. If you have a legitimate fear of a needle, then, yeah, well, there you go. Dennis, you've got another reason. Keep it up, Dennis. Good to hear from you, man. Stay well and have a great week. Let's see what Terry's got. Terry, welcome to the show. Happy Monday.
Good morning, Brian. I actually had a different view, but I wanted to bring up some points that I've had in conversation with friends of mine who happen to be black as to why they won't take the inoculation. And it has to do with a healthy distrust of their government.
Good for them.
And it goes back to, there's been 100 times in U.S. history where our government has violated the trust of the people, but I think of Red Tails during World War II and two other black regiments of infantry who were injected with syphilis.
Yeah, I thought that was – wasn't that Tuskegee?
Yeah.
They did that, and they just let them go just to see how the disease progressed and how it caused them to deteriorate, because syphilis will rot your brain. That's how Al Capone ended up dying.
Right, and then there was also Cincinnati General Hospital, which I believe is UC today, if I'm not mistaken, that was injecting patients with radioactive isotopes, which were 100% lethal.
Oh, my Lord, I wasn't aware of that one. But you see, healthy distrust of government, that's kind of why I went to Fauci's conclusion that the South was all these red state, and in the back of his mind, he wanted to use the word redneck. These rednecks that don't want to get a vaccine, trying to say it's a conservative mentality that will cause you to decide in your own informed world that you don't want one. It could be anybody of any political stripe. As you mentioned, there are a lot of black people who have great distrust of the government for some pretty darn good reasons. Are they all Republicans? Hardly. So the idea that, the one side of the political ledger that's rejecting vaccinations happens to be on the right side is erroneous in and of itself. There are a lot of people on the left side that don't want the vaccine either. We live in a country of freedom of choice. You're free to make that choice. And I guarantee it, for the most part, that's why they were applauding at CPAC. Not because it's a conservative thing to reject the vaccine. Appreciate Terry and excellent historical examples there. Yeah, black people have a very good reason to be suspicious of government. Hell, isn't that what Black Lives Matter is all about, kind of? The authorities are the evil ones. The police department are the murderers. That is authority, and that is being questioned by, leftists, as well as the anarchists, the Antifa folks. Yeah, they're all questioning authority as well. Huh. And they're all on the left side of the ledger, too, aren't they? Interesting. Interesting. 655, don't go away, because what else is interesting? My dad, generally speaking, but also with the Monday Morning Spleen Vent. That's coming up after the news. I hope you can stick around. Plus, Alex Trentafilo on the passing of the late, great Judge Norbert Nadel after 30-plus years on the bench and his tireless efforts and work throughout the legal community and elsewhere. It's going to be a good story that I'm sure Alex is going to tell. Filled with grief, but a great guy. Alex at 740. I'll be right back.
About it, talk about it. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Trigger alert, trigger alert. This is a 55 KRC trigger alert.
706 here at 55 KRC, the talk station, Mondays. Enjoy my Monday. Because you heard the trigger alert, you know my dad's on the phone. We're going to be doing that Monday morning spleen vent thing. Hey, Dad, did you have a good weekend?
I did, in fact. How about you?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Managed to get the grass cut last night, and I hate to bring that up again, but I was really worried about it because it was getting so dang long because of all the rain we were getting. And then yesterday, I woke up, and it's just pouring down rain, and I'm like, oh, no, it's going to be another day before I can get it done. But it was dried out enough by the time dinner rolled around, so after I was done grilling up the lamb we ate for dinner, I went out and cut the grass. So
you caught my my eye there when you were talking about the people on the left are really strange.
Oh, yeah.
They want to change the meaning of things.
Everything.
And you talked about exotic.
Exotic, yeah.
What's wrong with them?
I have no idea. If you're just tuning in and you didn't see the stupid exotic or stupid Washington Post article, apparently, according to their food editor, a woman by the name of Daniela Galarraza says that we should stop calling food exotic because it's racist.
Everything is racist. It drives people crazy.
Right.
What the hell's wrong with them?
Yeah, and you know what? This whole idea that I was looking for the quote. I have never ever heard. This is a quote from this person. Another woman, Chandra D. Waring. The article quotes her, professor of sociology at the University of Massachusetts. Quote: I have never heard the word exotic used in reference to something that is white. Close quote. Well, first off, you know, it confuses me. What the hell is white anyway? I mean, I always thought, you know, anyhow, Eurocentric or whatever. But that ignores the reality that someone from another foreign land, you know, if you use in the context of this person who said that they enjoyed their Afghani meal and referred to the spices as being exotic. So that's racist. But if you're in Afghanistan, and as I pointed out, you fed them Skyline chili, they may very well describe Skyline as exotic, you know, having never tasted it, or Geta, or some local cuisine that only white people or whatever have eaten. I mean, yeah, the whole thing is preposterous.
Everything is about being a color now. You're a racist. And this, everything they talk about, it's always hanging on that. You can't say the right words.
But see, that's what they want you to feel. They want you back on your heels constantly, looking around you with deer in the headlights look about your speech, because if you don't believe what you're saying to be racist, they're going to tell you it is anyway.
Right.
I mean, this is the whole, you know, it's like microaggressions. What the hell? Hey, what the hell is a microaggression anyway? Well, it's one of those things where you're being aggressive and you just don't realize it. Oh, in other words, you're not taking my intent into the equation, which was the point on the exotic. The person who referred to the Afghani cuisine as exotic was not trying to be negative.
Keep up with all that.
That's what they want.
And here they are. They would like to have more people be on their side of the levee or the of the line to be one of their people that votes for them. And well, they got too many ideas and, I guess, rules. I don't want to be there.
Oh, and who can keep track of them?
You can't.
You can't. It used to be, remember, LGB, and then they became LGBT, and then it's LGBTQ, AR plus. I mean, I've lost track of what any of this even means. It's like, hey, you haven't added me to the little list, so add me to the list. We'll just put a plus after it, and so that means we include everybody that hasn't been aforementioned by a letter. Anyhow, I think it's going to come back to haunt him, Dad. I saw a couple of articles.
Well,
this wokeness is rejected by so many people, even within the Democrat Party.
Amen.
That.
Hey, listen, I've got to give credit before we run out of time here. I'm going to give credit to Kimberly Strassel, the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
Publishing a column about Biden's nominee to run the Bureau of Land Management.
Oh, yeah, this is a frightening one.
Now, you might say, who cares about the land management thing here? Well, Biden picked up a person who is an eco-terrorist to do this job and do it for him in his, I guess, his whole, I don't know what the hell they're going to do with it. Anyhow, but this eco-terrorist is Tracy Stove Manning, and she is and was a terrorist, I'm telling you, straight and straight.
You mean like one of those Earth Liberation Front people who used to spike trees?
Yes, exactly.
Wow.
They put metal into trees.
Oh, yeah.
Keep people from cutting trees down,
right.
And they wind up killing people with it.
Yeah, you put a tree that's got a spike into it through a sawmill or something, it's going to completely destroy the sawmill equipment and kill people. You're right, they have done that.
That's right. Now, she joined an organization way back when, openly doing this with tactics that'll wind up killing people if they start cutting into the trees that are out there. They just don't want anybody to log, I guess they
right.
call it.
Right.
And the logging, the mining, the public access to federal land, all of that kind of stuff, they organize. And if you get in there to touch any of those things, or
right.
you might wind up with your face cut in half.
Yep. That's what environmental terrorism is all about. It's to frighten other would-be workers into not doing their job because, of course, it involves cutting down trees. Gee, has anybody noticed any inflationary pressures in connection with the housing industry driven by the price of lumber? Maybe has something to do with the massive tariffs they placed on Canadian lumber. United States lumber now probably will be off limits because the Eco-Terrace is in charge of land management, meaning we aren't going to have any lumber. No more suburban homes. And that's what the environmentalists ultimately want, isn't it? They hate
yep.
suburbs. They hate consumption. They hate building. And, of course, they hate when you cut a tree down. Trees make houses and, therefore, bad. They're bad.
And guess who is going to decide whether she gets the job or not? Senate Democrats.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
That ain't fixed at all. Hey, look, there should be no room in the federal government for anybody who hangs around with terrorists of any kind.
Agreed.
And listen, see if this happens or not. If this Tracy Stone Manning gets appointment there, Joe Biden will probably do it while he tries to say it. But nevertheless, we don't need any more terrorists in our government, Joe. Stop that stuff.
Yeah, indeed. And then, you know, also look at it the situation that's unfolding in California. You know, if you blindly pursue these green feel-good issues and throw up windmills in place of where perhaps a nuclear power plant should be, you're going to have a power shortage on your hands. Hydroelectric's
yep.
running out because, wow, apparently we've heated the globe up to the point where there's no more running water. How are they going to get electricity when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining? Talk about importing it from other states who also are suffering mightily because they too don't have the reliable power generation sources like coal, gas, nuclear. So these are the people that are in charge. This is the type of people the Biden administration will put in charge. It'll be more draconian. It'll be more difficult to generate power, and you're going to be spending
yep.
more time in the dark.
Yep, yep.
Try your cell phone when the power ain't working. I mean, seriously.
Dad,
hang on. I know you got more to talk about. So let us pause. We'll continue with chapter two of this morning. /7:18 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with my dad doing Monday morning spleen vent. And after that, we'll hear after some local stories. Alex Trantafilo, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party, on the storied career and life of the recently deceased Judge Norbert Nadel, passed away over the weekend after a short-term illness. And sorry to hear about that because everybody knew Judge Nadel. You ran into Judge Nadel a couple of times over your life, I bet, Dad. you couldn't avoid him.
Very good guy, and
yeah.
We certainly will miss him.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, what else is on your mind today?
Well, you hear a lot of talk about the critical race theory being taught in our schools, and lots of parents are raising hell about it, as well they should.
Yep.
And I've got a little heads-up thing here that something you ought to know. All the teachers' unions are not backing down.
Yeah.
In fact, the union is doubling down, and the most recent meeting they had not very long ago, showed their union priorities, leftist union mission creep, you might call it, It's a slate of critical race theory, and their singular focus for National Education Association, are you ready for this, to improve the state of American education. That's what they're saying.
Yeah,
anyhow.
Right.
Yeah, but they're not going away from their commitment of teaching things that critiques white supremacy, anti-blackness, racism, other forms of oppression in our schools. This is not what most parents want, and they don't want their kids hearing it all the time in school.
Well, I suppose I must interject. You see, if you look at everything as we have just these illustrations we've talked about before through the idea that every single thing is racist, then you are going to attack everything as being racist. The problem is it springs from an erroneous presumption that everyone and everything is systemically racist, and that's the thing that most people can't abide. I mean, if you really had Jim Crow laws on the books and black people were deprived the right to vote, et cetera, then you would have something serious to talk about and a system that you need to change for the better. I mean, I just, they make up racism where they can't find it. That's like the calling something exotic is somehow racist. You're like, whoa, what?
Well, teachers should know they don't have to join a union now.
True.
They don't have to, nor do they need to be in one at any time. You can still get some of the benefits that you seek being a teacher, at including the American Board for the Certification of Teachers' Excellence. So when you hear about many schools rejecting critical race theory, that is true, but not all of them. So make sure you check out your children's schools yourself and keep checking, because they may try to slip it in on you the next week while you're not looking or thinking about it.
Well, I ran across this article, and I thought it was one you're going to bring up, but same thing. And here's where it gets even worse, Dad. And this is the point I go to, you know, why I think cameras in classrooms would be a good idea so parents can see
yes.
what their children are going through, what their teachers are teaching.
Exactly.
And we pay the salary. It's much like a police officer. They're in charge of something so unbelievably important, which is our children's education and quite often ideology. We got more than 5,000 teachers already signed onto a pledge at this leftist Zen Education Projects that says that these 5,000 teachers, will vow to continue teaching critical race theory even when the state legislatures have banned it.
No.
Defiance of the law. So you've got you go to your state legislature and you're like, oh, good. They're because right now lawmakers in at least 26 states are attempting to pass legislation that would require teachers to, stop teaching critical race theory, this idea that we are all inherently racist and that we should hate each other based upon the color of our skin and all that. So you got legislators are coming in, doing their job, at least it's the will of the people, pass a law saying you can't teach this divisive crap in our schools. The teachers are going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to do it anyway. That's one. How about right there? We just post this one up for the reason why we need cameras in the school classrooms.
And they don't. I tell you what, they shouldn't give them a paycheck if they do it.
How are we going to know if they do it or not?
Well, as you say, let's get the cameras going and check them out. They don't know when you do the checking. Just run them when you want them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not right. You don't want to pay for that in your school.
Trust me, Dad. I know. And I don't know. It just shows the power that teachers can have. And I look at the ones that influenced me and had lasting influence on my life. And fortunately, the ones that did, I still hold true to the philosophies today. Thank you, Mr. Burkholz. I know you're out there listening. But, I had a lot of sort of leftist teachers, and you just kind of dealt with them along the way. But teachers are very influential, and if you have a curriculum that the Board of Education in your district has assigned, and they intentionally go around it, if they intentionally go around state law and go ahead and propagandize your children, you got a real problem on your hands, and there's another incentive for perhaps parents to look in a different direction, homeschool or charter school or private school. That's why I believe in school choice.
Well, you know what? not? Wait, I wonder if those people that want all that kind of crap being taught, what would they be saying if we had the kids learn how to shoot a gun?
Dad, boy, well, I think that's actually a pretty good idea.
I think it is, too.
It's for their safety. If they know how to shoot a gun, they know how to unload and load a gun, then they know how to properly deal with one to the extent they're ever faced with the whole visage of a gun. Oh, my God! A gun's entered my field of vision. Now, after I get out of my fetal position, I've been trained, so at least I don't need to be fearful of it because it's not going to get up on its own and start shooting someone.
That's right.
Love you, Dad. Tell Mom I said I love her. I know she's listening. She can hear it for herself.
I'll tell her she's here now.
Spread love around the house, and I'll look forward to talking with you later in the week. And, of course, for another edition of the Monday Morning Spleen Event next Monday.
Love you, man.
You can make it to lunch Wednesday, Anderson Pub and Grill. I know that's a long haul for you, Dad.
Hey, I'm going to try.
Are you?
In fact, I asked your mother about it just a moment ago.
Okay. Well, I know it's a longer haul than you used to, but if you can make it, of course, everyone would look forward to seeing you. And if you do decide you are, let me know so I can let the listeners know that you're going to be there.
Well, write me down right now.
Fantastic.
Do my best, okay?
I love you, Dad.
Love you.
Hopefully see you on Wednesday. 7:25 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. And I hope you follow up with your cancer. It's 7:30 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Hope you're having a decent Monday. Tomorrow, getting community guns off the street. We've had the conversation about community guns before. Those are like the shared gun. The thugs know where this gun is, and when they need it, they go retrieve it, use it, and then come back and put it back to where it was. And the idea of getting you, members of the community or wherever you know one of these community guns is, to let the cops know about it, that's the key. Get a lot of guns off the streets if they're sharing them that way. I just found it interesting that they'd be so willing, whoever these criminals are, to be sharing a gun. You'd think someone would just walk away with it. Anyhow, over to local stories here before we get to Alex Trantafila, who will be talking about the biggest local story going on today, and that is the death of former Judge Norbert Nadel, of course, Hamilton County Recorder, the 30 years on the bench, storied career. And apparently, as all the accounts are coming out, an unbelievable mentor, which is really important for folks with a lot of experience, pass along that experience, that knowledge, that education to younger people, and you'd be doing the world a great service. Stabbing and a crash. The police are still investigating this. Don't have much details, or many details, I should say, but the police found a driver stabbed, suffering from life-threatening injuries inside a vehicle that crashed on 3rd Street near the entrance to the Clay Wade Bailey Bridge. Person taken to UC Medical Center. Victim's condition currently not known. Police say that the person was stabbed before the crash, but they're not sure where the stabbing occurred. So bizarre, absolutely. Hopefully we'll get to the bottom of that and have more information for you later. Could have been an award winner this morning. We have an office manager accused of stealing $500,000. This from a pediatric care clinic over in Delhi. Indicted on July 8th, 39-year-old Christy Adams. Police say she embezzled the money from Westside Pediatrics. Now facing 10 felony counts, 6 counts of theft, misuse of a credit card, telecommunications fraud, forgery, and tampering with records. Delhi Township Police Department said the embezzlement began right after she took the job in the fall of 2019, using the money to pay for vacations, cruises, vehicles, her daughter's wedding, and increasing her salary. According to the press release, it's kind of bizarre. Doctors were aware that there were financial issues going on over the practice, but they thought it was the pandemic. You know, numbers down, not enough patients. No. That's when police determined that she had stolen over $500,000. I guess they did an audit. Facebook page for Westside Pediatrics says there is no allegation that Ms. Adams compromised the privacy or rights of our patients or the security of their personal information. She was arrested. She was released on her own recognizance Friday. Court date has yet to be set. I appreciate that. Nice work there, lady. Yeah. More patrol officers for the rest of the summer. This started last Friday. Thanks to Sensei Police Chief Elliot Isaac doing the right thing. Got new police officers. They're adding a group of 20 to 25 bike and patrol officers to the regular weekend staff. That way, if there is an issue or those officers are needed any given place, like for a riot, an outbreak, maybe a crowd of 400, 500 young people who refuse to honor the curfew or the fact that the park is closed kind of thing, bring in the extra officers. Here they are. According to the chief in a statement, this team is not focused solely on crowd control, but if a district needs immediate assistance, they're readily available for whatever that need may be. Our department's biggest asset is our presence, and by adding additional resources to help with visibility and deployment, our city will be a safer place. Send the officers to where the crime is. Model theory of law enforcement. Or should say, jokingly say, novel theory. No, that's what you're supposed to do. And contrast that with a city like Portland, where you defund the police and kick them out of the neighborhood, you see the opposite effect. It's not a safer place to live. It's a far more dangerous place. And that's when people start leaving, the minute they can. Coming up at 7:35, going to be talking to Alex Trantafila, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party, of the storied career and life of Judge Norbert Nadel, who sadly passed after a short illness at the age of 82. I don't think there's really anybody in the legal community can't say they weren't impacted in some way, at least locally, of course, by Judge Nadel. 7:35 right now, time for a word for foreign exchange. Had a wonderful experience at foreign exchange. Have not ever had a bad experience at foreign exchange. I don't think it's really possible. Because you know you're going to foreign exchange to have your imported car fixed, check. You know you're going to save money over the dealer, which is very important, check. You know you're going to leave with a full warranty on both parts and services. And you know the mechanic that's going to be working on your car is an ASE certified master technician with access to all the data from all the manufacturers out there. So they have your car's manufacturing information. They can do software upgrades for your car. And if your car happens to still have a carburetor, older cars, the exotic foreign ones, yeah, they can still work on that too. It's amazing, isn't it? And they do it for less than the dealer. That's assured. And I can only imagine what the price of my wife's car would have cost with the dealer. We just had foreign exchange install new struts, new pulleys. Seven forty at 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with Alex Trantafila, head of the Hamilton County Republican Party. Alex, I wish we had a more uplifting topic to talk about. We can talk about the man's life, and that was extremely uplifting. We're talking about the passing of Judge Norbert Nadel, who you refer to as Nick in your Facebook posts. Welcome back, Alex. It's great to have you on.
Brian, it's always good to be with you, and I agree. We've been together on better circumstances. But, you know, Judge Nadel lived the kind of life that's to be celebrated. And
yeah.
For that reason, I was honored that Joe invited me on today to talk about my old pal, Judge Nadel.
Wow. And you see, your old pal, he was very, very well connected. He had lots and lots of friends, and he would show up everywhere. And, of course, he lived a really good, long, prosperous life. He passed after a short illness at the age of 82, so... That's honestly, from my perspective, that's not too shabby, Alex.
That's pretty good. There's no question about it. And, you know, more importantly, Judge Nadel lived a real life of consequence, Brian. You know, he made an impact on a lot of different people. And you see it in the last, you know, 24 hours here on social media and the outpouring of support from people in our local courthouse. You know, I was honored to serve as a Court of Common Pleas judge with him. You know, I sat once on a three-judge panel, which is a little wrinkle in Ohio law, Brian, where on capital death cases, one can opt for three judges to hear your case at the trial level, something that we know happens at the appellate level,
right,
but not at the trial level. And, you know, I sat with Judge Nadel once, and it was just a highlight for me as a young judge, frankly, to be able to sit with him and learned a lot. You know, one of the things I can say now that I remember is sitting up on the bench, you know, right behind his nameplate was a little sign, and it said, "Be patient." And it was just a good reminder to himself to be patient with the people that were in front of him, and something that he followed. That's advice he followed. You know, you always got a kind smile and a warm reception when you went into Judge Nadel's courtroom. It was a place you didn't care. And again, I've spent the last 13 years here in private practice as a lawyer, and you know, always enjoyed going in there anytime I had a case, because you were going to be received warmly by the judge. So lots of good things, Brian, to say about Judge Nadel today.
And from all accounts, not biased. I mean, you know, we all worry about judges and their Republican bias or their Democrat bias or their liberal or their conservatism. I mean, I think you would characterize him as a conservative jurist insofar as, like, interpreting the law. He wasn't exactly an activist, but he was objective with regard to the parties that were appearing in front of him on the case.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, one of his sayings that, again, everyone in the courthouse knows is if he didn't like a criminal case that was brought that he thought was, you know, not meriting criminal prosecution, he would say that case is a jack. And what he meant is, you know, gosh, this isn't the world's strongest criminal case. Well, you know, you would expect a law and order Republican to not have that attitude. But he did. If he thought it was, you know, if he thought the case was weak. He wasn't afraid to tell the prosecution that. And again, if you were a dangerous criminal, he wasn't afraid to put you away. He had a really good barometer for that kind of thing. And, you know, Brian, that's kind of what we want from our judges.
It is.
That independent thinking. And he was very good about that.
Well, let's face it. I mean, you could say that strikes at the heart of his conservative, at least fiscal conservative values. He wasn't about to let the taxpayer dollars be wasted on a case that wasn't going to be prosecutable. I mean, that's just him telling it like it is, which he always did.
Well, he did. And you know, one of the things, again, as I'm remembering him, once he left the bench, you know, judges are apolitical. They can't endorse other candidates. And, you know, they really don't even run with Republican or Democrat next to their name. But, you know, they can be endorsed by the party. He was a longtime Republican-endorsed judge. But when he left, you know, he joined the ranks of the politician, so to speak, as an elected office holder, as recorder. And that's when, you know, you really saw his conservative nature. He was a taxpayer watchdog. He was critical of some of these levies that would come down the pike and never afraid to call it out when he thought that your tax dollars are being wasted. Very, very strong in that regard. And I really enjoyed him as a Republican leader here. He was always a friend. You know, he was a contributor to the cause financially, something, of course, we always valued to have people on our team supporting our efforts financially. And he was also, just a go-to person for anything that the Republican Party ever needed. So, he was a character, you know, Brian, he really was. And from the blue robe down to his sayings, some of which I've already repeated here, he was part of what makes our community great. And, again, it's wonderful to celebrate his life, even though we mourn the passing of him, because he was just a wonderful guy.
Well, we'll pause. I along those lines, as we go into the break here, Alex, I've got a couple of questions to ask you, and particularly his most famous case, of course, was the Pete Rose case. I got a kick out of the Inquirer report, and they interviewed former retired judge Sylvia Hendon, who we all know quite very well. And it was good seeing her at the Mike Robinson fundraiser, as well as you. I got to put in a word for that. But Hendon said he was whip smart and had a wicked sense of humor. And then when Dan Horn or Sharon Coolidge asked for her favorite memory, she said, "You can't print my favorite memory," when it talked about his wicked sense of humor. So I can only imagine what was going through Sylvia Hendon's mind when she answered that question. But he did have a rapier-like wit, from everything I understand. Alex.
Great death on the bench in a lot of different ways. He was a great guy.
He was. Pause for a moment. We'll come back. Alex Tranthofilo about the life of Norbert Nadel. It's 7:49 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. A very, very happy Monday to you, with the exception of what we're talking about today. It's the passing of Judge Nadel. Yes, Judge Norbert Nadel, 3 decades on the Common Pleas Court bench. Of course, Hamilton County Recorder was his last position, elected capacity. My understanding is when he was a child, he actually kind of put himself through school, attended night classes at Chase Law School, and took over the retail business after his father died when he was in high school, which he ran while he attended college. Is that a story you're aware of, Alex Tranthofilo? That was something I read in the Inquirer. I was not familiar with his past in that work career.
You know, I read about that as well, just as you did, and frankly was unaware of that part of his history. But not surprised. Again, you know, his you know, Brian, as you know, judges sometimes, not sometimes, they actually have to manage court operations. In addition to sitting and doing the things that you typically think a judge does, listening to cases, they also have an administrative side. And when he was the administrative judge, you know, running the courthouse, he ran it like a business. So none of that surprises me. And, you know, he was a guy, by the way, when the when the rash of improvements came to the courthouse to remodel courtrooms, et cetera, Judge Nadel said, no thanks, no taxpayer money on my courtroom. And really, until the very end, his courtroom remained one of the courtrooms that was still, you know, in its original form from, gosh, the 30s, 40s, and 50s probably. And, you know, coat of paint here and there, of course, but never the massive remodel. That, you know, again, and not that there's anything wrong with the remodeling that's been done. Some of it's necessary. But
right.
He was the guy who pushed back on that. He was very, very fiscally conscious and conservative. By the way, Brian, even in a time when Republicans were darn near shoo-ins to win these spots, he lived it out. He lived out his conservative mind frame there, even as a judge on the administrative side.
Are you familiar with any case that he presided over that was more famous than the Pete Rose decision? I mean, I remember when he read that decision on a Sunday from his chambers. Highly unusual that, but that I honestly would have to say that was typical Norbert Nadel right there.
Well, yeah, that case, you know, I think I might have been in high school then, so I remember it sort of in the news. But I'll tell you, the most recent case, of course, was his handling of the Tracy Hunter case, which, you know, is a little bit more, you know, the media is not writing about that as much because it's you know, pretty divisive, not because of him, because of her, by the way. But, yeah, the Tracy Hunter matter, many people recall she was a juvenile court judge who was ultimately indicted for some potential criminal activity there. And he managed that, again, with just great level-headed good nature. You know, he was being attacked routinely by her supporters, accusations of racism thrown at him. And he smiled his way through all of it and did his job. And the jury ultimately decided on the one count that she was guilty. They hung on the other two counts, which is going to happen. But Judge Nadel handled that with great dignity. And his rulings along the way were all upheld on appeal. And, again, that's a famous case, maybe more recent to the memory than the Pete Rose incident. But, again, another example of the kind of jurist he was. And, you know, Brian, I don't want to go too long here, but, you know, the case I sat with him on was a horrific death penalty case involving a young boy who was raped and murdered, 3 years old, and awful. And ultimately, you know, we did mete out the ultimate punishment, and he handled that. He was our presiding judge of the three-judge panel. And, you know, I just remember, again, his steadiness there. And Clyde Bennett, you know, famous local defense attorney, defended the case. And so, again, I had up close and personal sitting next to him, you know, both in our robes as he oversaw that case. So, you know, lots of cases in his 30-plus year career that we could talk about, but those are just a couple.
Yeah. And he presided over death penalty cases. That's, I suppose, one of the perils of the job. But so he was in favor of the ultimate sentence then in that particular case.
Well, you know, Brian, as you know, I mean, as a judge, you got to enforce the law, even if you don't necessarily like or agree with it. That's something we part company with on the liberals, right? So,
yes.
Death penalty is the law in Ohio, and you can't, as a judge, say, "Well, I'm just not going to enforce it." You know, you can't do that. So, I don't really ever know what his personal opinion was about the death penalty, but if the facts and the law merited. You know, if the aggravating circumstances outweigh the mitigating factors beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the legal standard, then you have to deliver the death penalty, something that he voted to do. And candidly, I did along with him in that case. So something that, you know, obviously very memorable personally to me, but just part of what he did in a long career on the bench.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your stories with us and sort of celebrating the life of Norbert Nadel, which we're doing right now. Where did Nick come from, Alex?
You know, I saw at least somebody texted me and said, "Where did you come up with that?" I'm like, "Look, I just when I got to know him, people inside called him Nick Nadel. I called him Nick. I never asked how. Just kind of a nickname, I think. And someone else may know the ultimate beginning of how that started, but I never called the man other than calling him Judge. But once I became his colleague on the bench, he was Nick Nadel to me and to lots of others, by the way.
That?
And I, when challenged about it yesterday, I thought, gosh, you know, I everyone I know called him Mick inside the courthouse. It was just kind of a nickname, I guess. And perhaps, and I hope, gosh, I hope I'm not offending anyone in his family,
no.
But that's just how we called him. So he was Mick Nadel to me. And when I saw him, that's how I greeted him. And never called him Norb or Norbert, just would call him either Judge or Nick. So, yeah.
Well, and in my experience was always he was referred to Judge. No one ever called him by his first name. So therein lies the mystery will continue. But it was certainly meant out of sort of affection or love or just because you were told to call him and not because of anything, untoward or negative. Anyway, Alex Tarantafila, thank you a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it. It was nice sharing memories about the judge and remembering some great things he did. And again, his legacy continues insofar as all the mentoring he did and all the guidance he shared with younger lawyers and folks in the legal community. So his legacy will live on, I presume.
Well, I'm pleased to have had the opportunity, and I appreciate Joe Strecker inviting me on and you inviting me on, Brian, to talk about Judge Nadel. He was a great man, and our memories today, our thoughts are positive with him and his family. So thank you.
You're more than welcome, and I will throw out an invitation if you're free. We're going to be at Anderson Pub and Grill on Wednesday for listener lunch. Always invited, Alex. I know you're a busy man, and Anderson, I don't know if you've got a pass to get into Anderson. I haven't gotten one yet, but they do let me in for listener lunches.
If Pappas is going to be there, I'm out.
That answers the question. Alex, take care and stay well, my friend.
Thanks very much, Brian. Have a great day.
You too. 756, 55 KRC Talk Station. I hope you can stick around for the upcoming Money Monday.
Excessive heat.
Russia. Border wall.
Our economy.
Wuhan.
Families are paying more
for top of mind awareness.
Here's the bottom line.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
8:05, coming up at 8:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. And very happy Monday to you. Always made happier because we get to talk money. Money Monday it is. We're going to be doing this, Brian James. Simply Money. I hope you tune in every Monday through Friday here, 55 KRC Talk Station, 6 p.m. Brian, welcome back. It's always good to have you on the program. Some great topics to talk about today. The topics that, well, impact everybody.
Yeah, these are some big, exciting, well, I don't know, maybe not so much exciting as they are impactful. I really tried there, Brian.
We'll give it impactful. Yeah, we don't want to be too positive, but I think pejorative adjectives would describe most of these. So let's start with the I word, inflation. And people have been grumbling about it, and it's creeping in. Well, it's not going to last. It is going to last. And they did some economic surveys. I did see the Wall Street Journal article. A survey of economists generally suggested that, you know, we're looking at maybe 3+% increase in the fourth quarter on average for the next couple of years, at least a couple of points plus in inflation. What is your take on this, and what is the salient point being? What do we need to do to deal with it as people who are responsibly planning for our retirement?
First thing, and I say this almost just about every topic that comes up when I'm working with clients and building financial planning, first thing is exhale. These are not things yet that we have to say, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. I better change everything that I understand about capitalism and so on and so forth. We have enjoyed really low inflation for the better part of 3 decades, pretty much. So
yeah,
we've kind of gotten used to the fact that prices just don't go up, but that's not reality. We are in a new economic situation. I shouldn't say new. We've seen things like this before. Crazy things come out of the blue and they drive prices in strange directions, and it takes a while for things to settle back down. So while we are seeing some increases, and everybody knows by now, we know about the increases in prices of lumber and steel and aluminum, all that stuff related to supply chain issues, that is starting to have some knock-on effects and is sneaking into other areas. And that's what those economists are talking about. We do still believe that that's going to go back to normal at some point. We are going to catch up. It's probably going to be a couple, 3 years before we get to that point. But at the same time, this does not mean rush out and, you know, dump all of your stocks and do anything crazy. In fact, I would say the biggest thing, most people, when we start worrying about anything that comes out of the blue, most people will say, well, therefore, that stock market's going to collapse and I should dump everything. That's a horrible knee-jerk reaction. And actually, Brian, if you think about it, what do you not want to own in an inflationary environment? What's the worst asset? Big pile of cash. The definition of inflation is the decreasing ability of a dollar to buy stuff. That's inflation.
Okay.
So the more cash you have, the more you're going to get hurt.
That's why putting it on your mattress, which does not have any return on investment, is a bad idea, because it is constantly and always depreciating because there's always some whiff of inflation. I mean, prices just don't go down very regularly. So that's just sort of a default understanding. You know, you either want it in a bank account that's providing an interest rate, which we know they don't do that anymore, or you want to have it invested in the market, which leads me to my question. Well, if inflation is going on with regards to the value or the price of goods and services, doesn't that also make the stock market go up as well?
Exactly. So who likes increasing prices? Publicly traded companies. So we're not saying you don't need that. You shouldn't have any cash. Cash serves a purpose. It's, you know, you need it. Cash is the oil that keeps everything running smoothly. So figure out what it is that you need. Here's what it costs my household to function for a month. Multiply that by a minimum of three, minimum. At least three, maybe six, nine, 12, something like that. That way you'll know that, yes, I have this pile of money that's sitting in the bank, not earning me anything, but that also means that I can float my household for a year or whatever without having to touch my long-term investments. Once you've identified that dollar amount, maybe it's $15,000, $20,000, maybe it's only $5,000, depending on how you live. Everything over and above that you can treat as a long-term investment. And getting back to your direct question, long-term investments, that's the stock market, Brian. Inflation, unless we become Venezuela, and I'm not quite worried about that. Yeah, we got a ways to get that bad. Inflation is actually good for the stock market. Somebody's making money off of these increased prices, and that's where you want to be for that part.
All right. Part of the inflationary pressures we see here, and you can't compare this to the Carter years and stagflation, because we had massive inflation, but there was no money and no demand for goods and services. I mean, that's just the cold, hard reality of the way it was. Right now, inflationary pressures seem to be coming because of the excessive demand and supply chain disruptions and shortage of specific goods. Like, for example, the housing shortage. There aren't enough houses to meet the demand that the consumer has. So it's a horse of a different color, isn't it?
Very much so. And at least think of it this way. We have inflation, which was already a word that existed. We did not have to invent a new word like stagflation to describe what was going on.
That's a good point.
I was born in the middle of stagflation. So I can't say I remember having to pay the bills at that point. But yeah, this is very, very different. And again, this is happening in the midst of a, believe it or not, a relatively healthy economy. The economy was in pretty good shape before the pandemic. Curveball, massive curveball, biggest curveball we've ever seen in the shortest period of time ever, hit everything and has just kind of knocked everybody off course for a little bit. But at the end of the day, we're starting to see things come back in. So it's all in a sense, Brian, if you think of it, it's almost the opposite of stagflation.
It is.
So, so maybe we do need to come up with a new word for it.
Well, okay. And part of the thing is also, I just want to get this jobs question in there. There are an abundance of available job opportunities, which also did not exist in the 70s. It wasn't like there were, you know, a help wanted signs hung all over the place. And I'm a little bit older than you. While I was not, you know, I was in school during the Carter years, I mean, elementary school and junior high school, but I still remember it. It was painful for a lot of people. I mean, there was a sense of gloom in the air, and the price of gasoline didn't help that. But now there is an abundance of jobs, and people are having to pay more money to get people to do the same kind of work pre-COVID. Does that impact inflation as well?
Absolutely, because there's still a lot of money moving around in a circle. If you think about it, you know, you and I are working right now. We're both on the clock. There's a lot of people out there listening to us right now who are on the way to go punch a clock. We're all going to earn money. We got bills to pay. Those people who receive our bills are going to go pay their bills. That has continued the entire time. That has really never taken a step back. And now that we're coming out of this, out of the very brief recession that we had, and I use this phrase, I think every week that we talk, the treat yourself economy. People are spending. Look at housing prices. Look at how crazy it is to go stay at a resort somewhere. You know, there aren't any deals right now to be had at those kinds of places because they're full. So the people are earning money and they are willing to spend it. That's a different story. The media is leading with all of the jobs and people who can't find work. And that's true. And it's tough for those people. But there's another half where they never got laid off, didn't spend a lot of money because we all sat at home watching the news. Well, all of that, the floodgates are opening. That's driving a lot of the inflation.
Yeah. And I, not to speak to my own financial circumstances, individually, my wife continued to work throughout. I continued to work throughout. And yet we didn't go out. We didn't. We just found ourselves not spending money. And we both have made comments like that. It's, you know, basically parked my wife's salary in an account, and it just, we just didn't have anything to spend it on. If we wanted to, you couldn't get it. You couldn't spend it. I mean, you know, if let's say you had a remodeling project you wanted to get done. Well, during COVID and masking and the demand and all, it just, well, that wasn't going to happen. Move on. You know, it's just the ability to spend the money was dried up.
Right. Yeah. The ability to spend it was there, but the ability to find the people and the stuff you needed to do whatever you wanted to do was not.
The goods and services weren't there. Yeah.
The demand is the floodgate that's breaking right now, and that's why we're seeing the inflation in the areas that we are.
All right, the final before we part company on this subject, we move on to something that just scares the hell out of me, government in charge of credit scores. The problems that supply chain is pushing, the result of supply chain disruptions, that's causing inflationary pressures because the availability of the specific good. I saw a great article about lawn furniture the other day. It's out there somewhere. It just isn't here in the store. It's stuck on a shipping container sometime. That's going to resolve itself in fairly short order, isn't it? I mean, isn't that your belief?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember, we had there. If you go all the way back to the beginning, think about it this way. And my wife works for a company that at some point was getting supplies from factories in Wuhan. And I remember her very early on, before we really knew about COVID, I remember her being confused that all of a sudden we can't get what we need. And it just spreaded. It spreaded from there in the form of people can't show up to work because their offices are shut down. And they can't produce what they do. And then therefore that comes down the chain. That was before the Suez Canal got constipated. So it doesn't take a whole lot, to stop things up. And that really, it's interesting how fragile and how quickly prices and inflation and all that stuff reacts to something, you know, little like just the Suez Canal, just a ship getting stuck sideways in the Suez Canal. Those things do add up, though, and they do have an impact very close to home. That's what we're living through right now. COVID was one thing, but then all these supply chain things were in addition.
Well, and throwing a couple of cybersecurity crimes to shut down pipelines, you got a real issue on your hands. Brian.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brian James, don't go away. When we come up or come back next, Congress considering a credit report. It is 8:20 right now, 55 Care CD Talk Station. Happy, very, very happy Monday to you. Doing Money Monday, I've been really looking forward to this one after being frightened by the topic that was on my list. Brian James from Money Monday is going to figure out whether this is a frightening thing or not. Congress considering doing some credit report overhauling, and in that vein, in the context of doing overhauling, also maybe placing the government itself in charge of credit scores. I'm sorry, I'm all too familiar with, and it seems like yesterday, Lois Lerner's IRS targeting conservative organizations as if we can count on the federal government to be a totally above board and not exhibit any bias toward any individual, political or otherwise, in establishing credit scores. Brian, your take on this one?
Yeah, so this is – some of it is I guess we have to say expected given the the swing in the administration that happened in November. So what's happening here – and this is not a pandemic-related thing. There were a couple acts that were in the bill or in the works from the House that actually did pass the House before the pandemic. Comprehensive Credit Act and one called the Protecting Your Credit Score Act of 2021. So passed the House and are now then went away for a while as we all dealt with COVID. But then are now kind of coming to the forefront again. What they're looking to do ostensibly is simplify the credit reporting process. So right now there are three credit bureaus, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. These are for-profit entities. They use the word bureau, which I was always curious about because it makes it sound like a government agency. But rest assured, these companies make money to do this. And what the proposal is that kind of data, that kind of credit history and your scores and all that stuff would be governed now by an entity under the existing Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, as opposed to these companies who make money off of it. That, okay, sure. I guess I can see the let's consider it, you know, because, you know, for-profit companies have different motivations and they're not, you know, there's certainly bureaucracy involved. They literally have the word bureau in them. Equifax itself had a data breach, let's not forget, 2017. So it's not like this has been running super smoothly. However, and here's the big but, what they're looking at, the things that they're highlighting in terms of the changes they're going to make, here's the goals of this act. So they're looking to no longer be able to use credit score information for purposes unrelated to credit. So this means not coming up during job interviews. You can't use it to, your landlord can't use it against you. So there were other things other than getting loans that this information gets used for. Also looking to reduce the amount of time that bad stuff stays on your report. So if you miss a payment, miss a credit card, normally that kind of stuff, or bankruptcies, for example, that stuff would stay on for 7 years. They're looking to reduce that to 4. Another one is to limit the reporting of medical debt. So if you have a lot of medical debt out there, it won't have the impact that it used to. And some also some steps to protect people who were affected economically by COVID-19. So on one hand, the drumbeat is simplify, optimize, so on and so forth. But what seems to really be happening, the focus is to really lower the bars for the things that we used to use these credit reports for.
Yeah.
That's a little frightening to me.
It is. I mean, these are in essence actuarial analyses that are done. These are not just arbitrary random things. And while I'm not going to defend the three credit companies, I have no idea how those three got selected to be the end all be all for our credit scores, given that they are private companies. And I know darn well, for example, in my case, and I just looked at it again, I got my credit score from all three. I know what it is. And all three of them think I still have a mortgage, even though we paid it off almost 2 years ago. Why is that? I don't know. But clearly they're not on top of their game completely. So I have questions. But the minute you start taking the government putting in, I'm thinking of this whole equity argument. It's going to become equity-based, which is not necessarily based on ability to discharge debt or credit worthiness. It's simply going to be a numbers game. And look, on paper, here we have one group that is marginalized in terms of their credit scores. That can't be right. There must be racism or something involved in it. Therefore, we are going to just ignore it. I mean, that you can see the government going that route, can't you? Which means the credit score ultimately wouldn't mean anything.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that's the I think that is the impact of the swing we saw in November. In terms of, it's more about equity. It's not about, let's make this a better, more efficient process. It's not about what the score is, or it's more about what we do with it. Who can get what with it? And again, the lowering the bar part really scares me, because it just smells like 2008 all over again. Right. So sent the mortgage industry into disarray 15 years ago, whenever that was,
subprime lending.
Exactly. It was really, really easy to get a loan. And then when we did hit the skid and had a real live recession, a lot of people instantly failed and were unable to pay their mortgages. Well, a better, more efficient credit scoring process might protect us from some of that. But this is more about lowering the bar.
Well, and as we end on that note, we'll move on to the next segment. We come back. Child tax credit checks will be arriving soon. What the implication is for that? I just remember, in terms of the credit and the problem that existed when the housing bubble burst, Brian, I had quite a few friends in the mortgage business back then. Sitting across the table at lunchtime, but with one, picks up the phone and I hear the words, "Oh, you can absolutely get a loan. You only need to be 24 hours out of bankruptcy." I mean, they weren't even taking into consideration the idea that someone was that recently in bankruptcy. That's a red flag in my book, Brian.
Oh, absolutely. And my little anecdote there. So I was working for a bank at that time. My job as a new young guy, this is in the early 2000s, was to go train the workers on how to use the 401k, why it was important. And we would have quarterly meetings. I started off in a conference room with maybe 15, 20 people. By the time I was done doing that, after 2 or 3 years, there were 300 people in a hotel ballroom. And I remember looking out and seeing people in sweatpants and pajamas and thinking, something doesn't look right here. Well, what was happening is they were bringing anybody who could fog a mirror to process mortgage applications. And shortly after that, the wheels fell off. But it was all about volume and not quality at all.
You got that right. No rules. It's all volume. 827 will continue on and find out about the child tax credit checks, which should be arriving soon. It's 8:31 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Coming up in the next segment, New York Times number one best-selling author Kathy Reichs with her brand new book, The Bone Code, inspiration for a television series you're probably familiar with. Anyhow, she's a forensic anthropologist, and going to be a fascinating conversation with her new work of fiction, which really largely surrounds nonfiction concepts. We've run into that quite a bit before. In the meantime, talking money for this Money Monday, and on with Brian James on the next topic. Child tax credit. This is another one of those COVID kind of things, Brian?
Yeah. So what we're seeing now, there are some changes coming to the child tax credit. So let's be real clear here. We've been talking about a few things here this morning. There was the Comprehensive Credit Act, the Protecting Your Credit Score Act. We're talking about a lot of acts. Those earlier two have not passed, are not the law yet. This one, the child tax credit changes, have gone through Congress, and Biden has signed off on it. So this is happening.
How much are we going to get? First of all, how much money are people? Yeah. That's what it all comes down to that. And who's eligible? Because this is all debt. We didn't actually have the money for this. This is a fiction, a work of the printing press, because we have 29 some odd trillion or whatever in national debt. So don't tell me this is paid for. It can't be.
Yeah, we don't have the money for it, but we still have room on our credit balances with all the countries that we owe. So it'll come from there.
Great.
Not a good thing, but that's just like anything else. So just to define some things here, let's remember what this is. A child tax credit. A credit is better than a deduction.
Right.
Credit means you're getting $1,000 credit means you're getting $1,000 one way or another. $1,000 deduction means you get to pretend that you didn't get $1,000 worth of income, and you get to keep maybe 15% or something like that. So credit, better than a deduction. And currently, a lot of people might think, well, what's the big deal? We've had the child tax credit for a long time. Well, a couple changes. So the one we've had for a long time, just to refresh, $2,000 per kid up to age 17. If you are married filing jointly up to $400,000 of income, or if you're single, $200,000. That's been there for a while. Now there's phase outs to those numbers too, but that makes for very boring radio. So we'll move on. The change is now you'll be able to get up to $3,600 for kids under six, $3,000 for kids age six to 17. 17-year-olds are included in this. The old one only went to 16. The income phase outs are lower, though, $150,000 joint or $75,000 for single. So the dollar amounts have gone up. But the new added element to this, too, is that what they'll do is you're going to be getting these. If you're in this situation, you don't have to do anything. This money is going to come to you similar to the way the stimulus dollars did. What they're going to do is they're going to look at your 2020 tax return, or if that's not filed, they're using your 2019. And they're simply going to say, okay, this family qualifies. We're going to go ahead and send them the money. In the past, you wouldn't see those dollars until after you filed your prior year's taxes. Then you would see it in your refund or in a reduced tax bill.
Well, all I can say is, wouldn't it be a glorious, glorious thing if everybody who is eligible for this tax credit, this cash infusion into their account, if they would just take that money as if it didn't exist, or and just give it directly to a private or charter school as opposed to keeping their kids in public education?
Well, you would think, you know, I suspect that's not going to happen.
I'm offering people an alternative, because everyone seems to be of late quite frustrated with the woke critical race theory thing that's going on in public education, because it's ruining our children and causing them to hate each other, which is not a good thing for our society. Here you go. You got $3,600. I would imagine that could go a long way to covering the cost of a different education. Just throwing it out there. I don't ask for your necessarily conclusions as to what you believe on that, but I know a lot of my listeners are concerned about it, and here's the money waiting for them.
Yeah, no, it's these are things that we're Americans. We tend to take, hey, dollars from the sky. I should go spend those.
I know, that's
TV or whatever. That's the American way. But you're not wrong. Put them in your retirement account, right?
Invest it prudently with a financial planner who is on your side with the fee-based
I might be biased,
planner.
But yes, I do happen to think
I had to put
idea.
A word in for you, because that's what you do, Brian. Brian, thanks for the information. I truly appreciate it. We'll look forward to another edition of Money Monday, hopefully next Monday. And between now and then, stay well, and we'll be tuning in after Hannity Monday through Friday for another edition of Simply Money here at 55KRC, the talk station.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks,
Look
Brian.
Look forward to it, man. 836 55KRC. It's 840 right now at 55KRC, the talk station. Hope you're having a very happy Monday. Getting community guns off the street, that's a topic we'll be talking about tomorrow, among others. In the meantime, I am pleased to welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show an author that many of my listeners, I am certain, are familiar with, Kathy Reichs, with her brand new book, The Bone Code. Now, you got to go back quite some time to, I believe, 1997, when she published her first novel, Deja Dead. Won the Ellis Award for Best First Novel, an international bestseller. How about that? Hitting the ground running right out of the gate. The Bone Code now, her 20th entry in a series featuring forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan. She also was the producer of Fox Television's longest-running scripted drama, Bones, which I know a lot of my listeners watched. One of the very few forensic anthropologists actually certified by the American Board of Forensic Anthropology. Kathy, welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show. It sure is a pleasure to have you on today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, I have to ask you if you know another board-certified forensic anthropologist. I grew up down the street from her, and she has quite a reputation in our community. Beth Murray?
Beth is one of my very dearest friends.
I kind of figured you run in tight circles with only 60 certified forensic anthropologists. Kathy, explain to my listeners who may not be familiar, what does a forensic anthropologist do exactly?
Well, we work for medical examiners and coroners, the military, a variety of places, but we help identify nameless bodies, especially if the pathologist can't do the normal autopsy because the body is burned or mutilated or mummified or decomposed or dismembered, or maybe it's just bones. So we help figure out who it is, and we help figure out manner of death, what happened to that person. Sometimes we figure out how long they've been dead. That's what we do.
And you write, now I guess I have to take you back to 97 when you wrote your first book with this recurring character, Temperance Brennan, the forensic anthropologist that appears in your books. Did you ever comprehend, believe in the back of your mind that this would ultimately be your career and that you would end up writing so many successful novels, Kathy? It's got to be an inspiration to a lot of writers.
I was just hoping that I could get published. Like any unknown debut author, you just think, okay, I'm going to finish this book. I'm going to polish it to the best it can be, and I think I said 60. I think I said if I get 60, maybe, 50 reject slips, well, I'll go back to my day job and forget about it. But that didn't work. That didn't happen.
That didn't happen. Of course, you have spread your interest and your knowledge of forensic anthropology out to the world because, like a lot of works of fiction, your work in The Bone Code with this recurring character, Temperance Brennan, is all based on reality. You just created a storyline to follow with it, right?
Exactly. Sometimes I draw from cases that I've worked on, or sometimes I draw from cases colleagues have worked on, like Beth. I've used a few of her ideas. Sometimes I do what we used to call in the writer's room, ripped from the headlines. And I see something in the media that, and that's what happened with this book. I saw a story about a Chinese doctor who went ahead against all agreements in the scientific community, and he edited the genomes of two unborn babies. We now have the whole human genome mapped, and we have the tools that allow us to modify it. But everyone's agreed we're not going to do that to make designer babies. So I saw that article and I said to myself, well, okay, what if someone did that for nefarious reasons? And then, you know, I take that core idea and I ask myself, well, what if this, what if that, what if that? And then I spin it off into fiction.
And you did just that, and surprisingly and eerily timed. I have to ask you, which came first? Yeah. Not chicken, egg, but your book and your ideas about The Bone Code, your newest book with Temperance Brennan, or COVID-19, Kathy? Because you write about a flesh-eating contagion that's spreading, and it centers around some murders and cover-ups and pharmaceutical manufacturing. It all sounds all too close to home, Kathy.
I know, and it's a little scary because a book takes 2 years. It takes me a year to write it, and then it's a year in production. So I started this book way before COVID, and it was finished right about the time COVID hit.
Oh, wow.
And so my editor and I decided we should go back in and insert some recognition that there had been a pandemic. But COVID was nowhere on anyone's minds when I began writing this book. So, yeah, it's a little scary.
It is.
So timely.
It is, especially when you talk about vaccine production and suspicious of the international pharmaceutical companies that produces the vaccines. And oh, another thing that makes it in the news all the time, and I was really appreciative that you addressed those genetic testing companies, because quite often, Kathy, those companies are doing your job for you by solving crimes because people voluntarily hand over their blood samples for analysis.
Yeah, well, spit. It's usually spit, but you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, so What I do is I look for things that are going to be on people's minds, perhaps, or there will be issues 2 years down the road from when I'm starting. So all of those things seemed, you know, very apropos, very timely.
Very apropos. And the book could not be more timely published, given the we're just coming off COVID-19 again, the Bone Code. And I did allude to it when I introed you. You did some work on Bones, the television, Fox Television's drama. What was it like working on that, if I can ask, Kathy, before we part company?
I had a great time. I'm not one of these authors who will say they took my work and they ruined it. It was fantastic. Our showrunner, Hart Hansen, and our writers were phenomenal. Emily Deschanel was brilliant, I think, in the way she portrayed. TV Tempe is a little different from book Tempe, but I think they're both very copacetic with each other. You can think of the TV show as kind of a prequel to the Temperance Brennan in the books. And I worked as a producer. I wrote some of the episodes.
Oh, wow.
And I had a phenomenal time.
So like your books, I mean, if you had to be, and, you know, I'm sure that maybe there was one episode or two or something that didn't quite track science, or maybe it did. Would you say that's a reliable show for us to binge watch and at least say that there is some legitimate connection that's believable, that, yeah, science works this way, other than, you know, sort of like the I don't know, Mission Impossible type movies, or, you know, CGI movies where they take liberty with technology and tell you things that can happen that really can't.
Yeah, we always use the word plausible. Is it plausible? And one of my roles as a producer, I read every single script, primarily to look at the science, to be sure the science was plausible, and then I would give notes. So we didn't do things that were ridiculously outrageous. We pushed the envelope, and we did solve every single case, and that's certainly not realistic, but that's true in the books, too.
Indeed. Well, it has been a great talking with you, Kathy. And then again, the recurring character, the forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan, appears again in her most recent book, The Bone Code. Kathy, my producers put a link to your book up on my blog page at 55krc.com, so my listeners know exactly where they can get it. Although they know other places, I will encourage them to do so. And you'll probably end up selling, once they get a hold of this one, 19 more copies, because they're going to want to read all your other books.
Well, that would be good. And I'm working on number 21, which will be out next summer.
Let's hope that the world doesn't coincide with something disastrous like that appears in the Bone Code. Kathy, thanks for the time you spent with us and all the years of entertainment. I'll look forward to talking with you next time your next book gets published.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Coming up at 8:49, 55KRCD Talk Station, Fasten Pro Roofing. What do you know about Fasten Pro? If you've been listening to me, you know right off the bat, the first word you think of is honesty. Which, when it comes to the roofing game, that is not a word that often crops up. Dishonest, perhaps. Criminal, maybe.